This is CliffCentral.com.
I have to draw attention just before we talk to him to Canton Pele having a big fight with Nomoni Sagasa.
I saw that this Twitter. Morning.
Yo, I saw another fight. Well, it wasn't a fight.
Canton, why are you fighting with people?
So I did not have a fight. I just gave her a gentle smackdown.
Yo, I saw Canton use an F-bomb at a certain reporter from The Citizen. It was.
Now, we've got Canton here. We're going to talk to him about the obviously the ZACP, and you know, Canton is now the leader of a political party. But up to a couple of weeks ago, he was also just part of our show.
You know,
so
coming in.
So he says to Nomoni Sagasa, because she says she's going to screenshot something. Apparently, according to her, you've done a 360, and she's going to archive this screen grab. So Canton replies, "No need. I never delete my tweets. I have 30-plus years of writing archived at CanthonPillay.com, and many of my views have evolved. You still support the ANC. I no longer do. One of us has grown up."
Ooh. But 360 also means you're in the same spot.
Well, you know, yeah. I thought it best not to point that out.
Just about everyone that is great, Matt. Yeah.
Everyone who climbed in has given her a smackdown and said, "This is the result of ANC's maths literature." Maths literacy. Confession time, by the way. Oh. I actually own a Steve Hoffmeyer record.
You do?
I do.
Really?
I do.
Which one?
It's the Blue Bulls theme.
Oh, God. That's a... really?
Yeah. Dion Duplessis was one of my dearest friends.
What?
And, he's dead now.
Okay. I just want to know.
Yeah. And so... And he was a Blue Bulls fan, and
that's that de blow bull.
And it's pretty.
I used to play that at Loftus on the two occasions I was there.
Yeah, oh. it's pretty thumping. That
all right.
But do you still have a CD player?
I still have tech going back to way before you were born,
like record players.
I have a wire recorder. Have you even heard of such a thing?
A wire recorder?
Yes.
What is that?
Well, before we recorded things onto magnetic tape, we recorded things onto wire. Mm-hmm. You did not know that such a thing was possible.
No, I had no idea.
In 1955, my parents did a Tamil classical performance on what was then the English service of Radio South Africa.
Yeah?
And that was recorded on wire, which I still have.
Unbelievable. My God.
I'm struggling to even picture what this...
What does this technology look like? Yeah.
Well, it just kind of picture a tape recorder, except you thread a wire through it rather than tape, because the wire is magnetized.
What's the wire made of?
Steel, I assume.
Oh, okay. And then it records it onto the steel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because essentially, the way in which tape works is that there's iron oxide filings.
Sure.
So, which are magnetized.
And then it plays out by electronic signal, whatever's on the tape. Okay, very
good. It's the reason why we use the phrase "on the wire."
There we go.
I don't think so. I think that comes from Telegraph.
Yeah, but it's because of the wire.
No, that comes from the Telegraph. That doesn't come from...
All right, Canton. everybody's very excited about the elections last week. We just spoke to Darby Skultz. I know, it's next week already.
Not last week.
It's next week. Did I say last week?
Yes.
Next week. On Wednesday next week, we go vote. You go and vote. And if you're not registered, obviously, it's too late for you. But you can go and place your vote, as Darby Skultz said just now, for one of the major parties. He doesn't think the small party is going to make a difference. This is an argument that keeps coming up. You get asked this all the time. Why would people want to waste their time on you or Bantu Holomisa or Mosiwele Kota or the ACDP? What's your standard answer to this?
Well, we'll only know whether we're a small party after the election. So it's
because there's no data on you at the moment.
There's no data on us.
So in other words, you haven't taken part in any by-elections, so there's no way for them to get a reading on whether or not you guys are strong or weak or in between.
Exactly right. But you know, if you have to take social media mentions as the
metric?
Objective, as a metric, I think that we're pretty much trouncing all of the other purportedly small parties.
Now, one thing I've noticed about you guys is that there seem to be a lot of people who have become interested in the election because they're single-issue voters. So maybe they're interested in, you know, free markets, or they're interested in gun ownership or any of these things.
Free speech, yeah.
Free speech. Yeah, these are things that we haven't really ever had in South Africa.
I know, isn't it great?
Well, yeah, I think it gives people options. Absolutely. This is about the evolution of democracy. But in America, for example, there are a lot of single-issue voters. There are people who will only go to the polls because of abortion or gun ownership or free speech or any of these other things that are massively important in the American society.
Well, lots of people have been piling into us around the abortion thing. And my stock response to that is...
What is your position, this ZACP position?
Well, we don't have a ZACP position because the Constitutional Court has already declared that, you know, the right to abortion is constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
My personal position is I'm pro-choice.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, it's a non-issue. It's not something that's going to...
So why would people be piling into you?
Well, because...
Seems uncontroversial.
Yeah, because for some reason, you know, people want to make that the reason why they end up voting for parties. So the ACDP, for example,
yeah,
very clearly is anti-abortion.
Pro-life, yeah.
Well, I refuse to use that phrase, pro-life.
That's what they call it. I'm just using their language.
What a propaganda coup that is, calling it pro-life. I call it anti-choice. Let's just call
okay.
it that.
All right. Okay. All right.
Anti-choice.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's this whole thing, you know, life begins at conception and ends at birth. Because, you know, once a kid's born, you toss it out in the street. You actually don't give, well, anyway,
yeah.
let's move on. No F-bombs this morning.
All right. What are the issues that your voters are coming up with? What are they most interested in?
Look, free speech is big up there. EWC is certainly big up there. Affirmative uh-huh. action is huge. And guns.
Okay. Now, you've promised something which seems like a fairly big deal. You've said you want to, in property, you want to change the way that property in this country is viewed. You want to make sure that by 2020, 20 million people own property?
Yes.
Is that possible?
Absolutely, it's possible.
How? I mean, you're a very pragmatic guy. Every time you've come on the Burning Platform, people have said, what we like about Canton is he has real-world solutions, and you're not interested in talking about theory.
Well, I basically got tired of all of the stuff that kept coming out from particularly the ANC supporters and from the EFF supporters and, of course, BLF, mm-hmm. around how important it was to, you know, turn land over to people. And I just started crunching some numbers.
Okay.
So there are a bunch of broad categories in terms of availability of land that – people currently already have access to. So the first broad category is RDP housing. Mm-hmm. So if you look in terms of the rollout that has happened in terms of RDP housing, there's been fairly substantial number that have been rolled out over
you
the
can see
past
them.
Years.
I mean, you could drive around most of the metros
sure,
and you'll
yeah.
see a lot
so,
of housing's been
built. So there's RDP housing plus there's state subsidized housing, which is basically rental properties and so forth. And we did a calculation of the total number of those properties. Mm-hmm. And that comes to 7,058,502
properties
that are RDP properties
okay.
or state subsidized properties. So in other words, they are properties that are owned. Well, actually, I should clarify as well that this the 7 million that we're talking about are those that they exclude where title deeds have been handed over
okay.
to RDP owners. Okay,
exclude.
So they exclude. Right. Okay. Okay. So in
so
other
who
words,
owns yeah. these 7 million properties?
The state does.
Oh
well, and you see, the RDP houses technically have been allocated to people for
yes.
handing over. However, there's a backlog in terms of the state actually making title deeds available.
Okay.
But so if you take into account RDP houses where no title deeds have been handed over, and you take into account all of the state-subsidized housing and rental properties,
mm-hmm.
that comes to a total of 7,058,502.
So that's a lot of properties.
That's a lot of properties. And basically what we are saying is that hand over every single one of those properties to the people that they have been allocated to immediately. Mm-hmm. Just give it to them. The idea of the state being a landlord is absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Just hand the properties over, give people the title deeds, and fast track the process of actually ensuring that the transfer goes through so that people are able to say, I am now a property owner, I actually have this piece
that
of
That would
ground.
Immediately make 7 million odd people, and probably more if you consider that a lot of these properties would be owned by families, that would make them property owners, that would make them participants in the economy where they could borrow against that, all kinds of things.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
They could start a little business, you know, because you know, they've got fixed property.
We've spoken about that on the Burning platform, yeah, before, that, you know, the shortcut to actually making people.
So whose interest is it to keep this property in the hands of the state?
Well, again, it goes back to the incompetence of the state, because allocation of resources to the actual process of handing over the title deeds,
yeah,
is something that doesn't actually happen. Now, you know that I've supported the Free Market Foundation for years, and the Free Market Foundation did this exercise out near Paris, where what they did was they took the informal settlements out there, and they basically went through the process of legally demarcating the land and drawing up title deeds and handing them over, and they call for sponsorship for people to hand, yes, over to basically sponsor someone becoming a property owner. So I contributed to that back then. I think they were asking for about 1,400 rand per household, mm-hmm, for people to donate in order to make someone a property owner. And
how's that gone?
Fantastically well. I wrote a piece on it. Check kanthanpalay.com and just search for
Wade through the 30 years
of archives.
Wade through the 30 years. Yeah, just search for Paris, and because obviously I don't write about Paris that often. Search for Paris and you'll find it. But that's a very specific example, and that township is now booming. Okay, what's happened is people have now been able to, well, in the first place, that means that they've been able to sell their property, yeah, and move elsewhere. Because one of the issues right now with RDP housing, okay, let's say you have someone who was allocated an RDP house 15 years ago and they're now retired. But they want to now move to, you know, maybe the place of their birth, as an example.
Yes.
And
they can't get rid of it because they have no document to show that it's there.
Exactly.
So if they vacate or they sell,
or pass someone else could make a claim. Or whatever, you know, come to. Or even rent it out. So that's 7 million that we've got so far.
Okay, Captain, so I have a burning question that I think you're the only person that can answer for any of us. Now that you're on the other side of the table.
Yes.
You've started a political party.
We'll get back to your 20 million houses in a minute.
Yeah. It's on the manifesto.
That you love reading.
What has your experience been like with the electorate, and also because you're on social media, with the media, in terms of now that you're no longer just an active citizen, now you are a political party leader. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? What have you learned from this experience?
Look, I've kind of been on the other side before, because mm-hmm. I spent a brief period in my career being a spin doctor. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the ability to actually work well with the media across the board was, you know, an utterly crucial skill, and I'd like to think that I did that extremely well. And, you know, I certainly don't have anything to complain about in terms of how media as a whole has been treating me. I think, by and large, if you take a look at the coverage that ZACP has been getting from the mainstream media, it's been extremely fair, you know, and I think that we've actually gotten a disproportionate amount of coverage just simply based on the fact that we're interesting. You know, that we're not just saying, you know, jobs for all and land for all. We're actually saying, hey, guys, we've got these solutions. And, you know, for some reason, when you come up with something that's interesting, people want to write about it. From the point of view of engaging with members of the public on social media, a lot of people, when they discovered that I was no longer part of the old guard that used to support the ANC back in the day, turned on me with a substantial amount of vitriol. And I found that quite interesting, just on the basis that, you know, one would think that people actually have more nuance in their life.
I was curious. I saw Daniel Friedman from The Citizen sent you a message on WhatsApp to say, please would you comment on this story? And you said, no, really, you're too busy electioneering. You don't have time to comment on the story. He then replied to say, well, then he's going to tell people that you don't have a comment on this and that you couldn't be reached for comment. And you said, well, actually, you can say, Canton Pillay doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, that was an appropriate move. Well, but it's true.
Just bring us into your thinking here.
Well, you see, right now, a lot of the issues that people have around politics is they try to distract politicians by doing a whole lot of whataboutery. So, you know, Trump makes a comment about something that goes down in Venezuela, but he doesn't make a comment on what goes down in Sri Lanka as an example. And then people kind of pile into him and they say, why has he been silent on this particular thing? And the fact is that if we spend our time commenting on every single thing that happens in the world, that's utterly irrelevant to what we're trying to do to fix the country. When would things actually happen? So our energy really has been focused on coming up with solutions. Like, I mean, number crunching around how we create 20 million property owners.
All right.
That's something serious.
Let's get back to that for a second. So you've taken care of 7 million if you give these title deeds to people who currently are in possession or have been promised and allocated an RDP house or a government leased housing subsidy.
Sure.
So now that's 7 million. That still leaves you with another 13 million to deal with by 2020.
Yes.
How are you going to get there?
Bantustans, homelands.
Yeah. What about them?
You see, the myth up until now is that people have been saying for the longest time, you can't just allocate property rights in the former Bantustans and the former homelands because of the fact that they've never actually been documented. You know, most of urban society is divided into urban, you know, the plural of earth, and which, you know, so you'll have a portion of a lot or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But there has been a very specific system by which all of the land in the formal economy has actually been divided up, and you know precisely where everyone's property boundaries are and all of that kind of thing. But that has never actually been done in the former homelands because there's no private property in those spaces. So for the longest time, every time you raise the question of give people property rights, the response is always, well, these places have never been properly designated. Well, guess what?
You can.
We actually have data that government has access to as well that very specifically drills down into exactly where every dwelling unit, they refer to them as dwelling frame units, is located in every single former Bantustan, former homeland in the country.
All right.
And we know precisely where they are.
So hard work's been done.
Yes, all the hard work has been done, and we have exact geographic locations in terms of every single one of those properties. And
in order to constitute a piece of property, you need to have a designated space mapped out.
And we're saying, well, the question about who has responsibility for the land surrounding the properties can continue to reside with the traditional authorities.
Mm-hmm.
However, the actual physical dwelling, give people title deeds to that immediately. And the exact data that we have in terms of all of those properties is 13,991,168 properties. And if you add up that 13,991,000 plus the 7,058,000, we actually get to 21 million houses. And I am saying that given that we have the data in place exactly, all we have to do at this point is to actually assign every single one of those geographic locations to the family that actually occupies that. And hey, presto, you've got property owners.
Hmm. Who's against this?
I would assume that it would be the traditional leaders who would be against it. And they would be against it right now because they are essentially, you know, lords and masters of all they survey. And
it's like feudal.
Yes, it's completely feudal. Mm. And I'm saying, look, you know, by all means, keep your traditional what-whats and control of the surrounding lands.
Mm-hmm.
But let's give security of tenure to the people who physically occupy those properties. Because what that then means is that someone who suddenly has a house there, they can then start improving that because they know it's not going to be taken away from them.
Mm. Yeah, and they'll have the ability to list it as an asset.
Exactly.
This is the first purpose of anyone who wants to start growing their own personal economy, let alone the economy of the region, the area, the country. This could have enormous implications.
Exactly.
So that stuff at the moment doesn't belong to anyone.
Well, it actually belongs to, well, in the case of KZN, it
belongs to King Goodwill Zwelithini.
Yes, it belongs to.
And it shouldn't.
Well, you know, I think that you're going to run up against the traditionalists who are going to tell you, oh, you know, historically the king has been responsible. And I'm saying that's fine. You know, you can have discussions around who owns the surrounding land on which the property is actually situated. But right now there's absolutely no reason why the homes themselves, you know, their exact geographic location. And I've, I don't know if I've sent you guys this press release where I was talking about, and I used Nkandla as a very specific example. You know, we can drill down into Nkandla itself. And I used the very specific example in terms of that municipality. I must tell you, by the way, the data sets that actually map all of these locations run into terabytes. Wow, there's a substantial amount of
huge
data.
Huge amount of work that's been done,
yes,
actually.
Massive.
For what?
Well, because remember that we need to...
These are surveyors, right?
Stats SA collects this data. It's needed for census.
Right.
So a lot of this information traces itself back directly to the census. And so just in Kandla by itself, there's 114,408 people living in the Kandla local municipality. 27,665 dwelling frames under the control of 15 tribal authorities, which in turn fall under 142 main places and 213 small areas. We've got to absolutely drill down with precision down to every single house, and you can zoom in on the pictures and see exactly where every household is. If you take a look at that,
amazing.
Every red dot represents the actual location of a physical house.
So, Pumi, your thoughts on this?
What would it take to make that happen? So, if
it takes will on the part of government to actually mm-hmm. make it happen. The first thing that you do is to actually pass a law that says, right now, if you happen to be the resident in one of those households, then you have 10 years. So, just that is the starting point. Just pass that law. And so just let that be the starting point. Then the process of documentation.
You make almost a third of the people in this country legal landowners of their own possession in terms of property.
Well, more than a third. Yes. We're talking 20 million people.
That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, but to pass a law, there are quite a couple of steps that come before having the law signed by the president.
Well, as I said, it requires will on the part of the state. And obviously we're going to start really campaigning for this to be done as a matter of urgency. And essentially the state has to come up with compelling reasons as to why it cannot be done. You see, what they've pushed up until now is that the process is so onerous that they'd never be able to get it out of the way. And now that is clearly a lie. So now that we've established that they have access to the data and they know exactly where these places are, all they have to do is just simply pass the law to start off with that says that you've now got security of tenure in these places, and then the process of documentation can then start. And I'm saying put that out to tender. I'm pretty sure that a combination of Google Maps and the Israelis will very quickly turn it into something practical that can then drill down into biometrics of people who are associated with that particular household.
And this would also count for townships.
Yes.
I mean, essentially, if you've been in possession and you and your family have been in a certain dwelling in a township for X amount of time, that's the strongest claim there is.
Well, that's pretty much a given. Well, to a large extent, Herman Mashaba has been doing a lot of that already, where he's basically been handing over title deeds en masse to people who are living in the municipalities. So I think that process is...
What an embarrassment that the ANC haven't come up with this idea themselves.
Well, I mean, the reason why they haven't is because they want the tribal authorities to continue to be existing in the way that they have right now, because that basically becomes a power structure. And if they happen to not like the particular tribal authority, in the case of Dalin Yebo, they put him in jail.
Wow. This is quite a big deal. This is seismic. I mean, this could be the most important thing in your election manifesto. This could be the most important thing in your promise.
Well, we've got more interesting things coming next week as well.
All right. Purple cow continues to stampede into.
Yeah, we'll be having a town hall. We'll be having a town hall meeting about this at 12:30 to chat about it.
Very good.
To the masses.
You can follow Canthan for more on Twitter. You can find him at Canthan Pillay. And you can also look for the purple cow. There are a lot of them. I've seen a lot of people changing their icon to purple cows.
Awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've seen lots of different kinds of purple cows too, with their horns in different positions. And I think people like it.
Yeah.
It's very clever. That is a clever logo. It's very smart work.
Could I have a last word on Steve Hoffmeyer?
Oh, of course, yes. Go ahead.
Well, you see, my view on every media organization, and let's take, you know, Cliff Central as an example.
Mm-hmm.
I've no doubt that there are particular people that you would never want on your platform. For whatever reason, you know, we're not going to go into the details. But
I'll say that I'm not sure about that, because we've had Andy Lemglitama and we've had Steve Hoffmeyer.
I'm not talking about from a political point of view, but I'm just talking from the perspective that, just in terms of your business values and all of that kind of stuff.
I'm not going to give Adolf Hitler a show. Yeah.
Well, whatever. But what I'm trying to say is that every media organization has that list of people that they will just put to the side and they'd never consider bringing them on. The issue right now in terms of Steve Hoffmeyer is that all they had to do was just to issue an internal memo that says, guys, in future we will not be engaging with this.
Instead, they made it about virtue
signaling. Now it is virtue signaling. And what a public relations disaster that is. Because, you know, immediately it opens up a can of worms in terms of the constitutionality of what they are doing. You know, I think that there's a very strong possibility that, you know, public interest groups like AfriForum will now turn around and say, we actually need to launch a legal challenge against this this thing.
Instead of just quietly letting it be the
exactly.
policy.
Yeah. You know, when I was running ETV News, I had what was called a shit list.
Mm.
And, you know, it was common course. You know, all of the staff knew about it.
The SIPC had one of those, didn't
they? Yeah, that's right. You know, people on the shit list don't get on. You know, obviously my criteria for the shit list were very different from the SIPC's criteria for the shit
list.
But
is this the result of woke people being put into positions of authority?
I have no idea what their marketing department was thinking.
It's because everybody is so in love with being famous. Everybody wants to be seen and, like, applauded and loved for the things that they're famous for being famous. That's, so when you do something, you want everybody to know about it.
You're wearing purple glasses.
I've always had my purple glasses.
Oh, goodness.
I just saw them now and thought that looks remarkably like the color on Canton's T-shirt. All right. Very good.
But like I said, you know, from a virtue signaling point of view, I think it's a public relations disaster. I think, you know, whoever in their marketing department came up with the thought that this was a good thing to do, they really need their heads read. Because, you know, frankly, the only thing that DSTV offers right now that no one else does is Super Sport. And
and the Mzansi Magic. My goodness, what will people do without Date My Family?
I've been without DSTV now for about 7 years.
Wow.
You mean you've never seen The River?
No. He doesn't even know what that is. He's completely confused. All right, everybody. Thank you very much. Canton, good luck with 20 million houses by 2020. That's a very audacious promise, but he's given us the details of how he's going to make it happen. Well, if you can make it happen. I mean, listen, it's going to need more than just you.
Yes, I know. But, you know, trust me, we're going to be banging on that drum.
Very good.
Every opportunity in Parliament.
That is Canton Pillay.
This is CliffCentral.com.